Tomcat Double Impact, the novel by Lance Winchester and Michael Crane. Prologue. Tom Ford had recently turned 21 and taken a well-deserved break from his studies and work. He found himself 15 miles northeast of his Orford, New Hampshire home, which is 20 miles north of Hanover, Dartmouth College's home. He often took time to hike the Mount Moosalaka region, a graceful landscape of rolling hills, forests, and fields surrounding one of the highest of the White Mountain peaks. However, Tom was not hiking on this particular day. He was hunting woodchucks, a despised varmint of farmers. Tom lay prone on a rocky hill overlooking a large hayfield, searching for woodchucks through his rifle scope. He basked in the splendid early July day, hot, dry, deep blue skies and no cloud cover. Aside from the distant rising heat waves, the conditions were perfect for shooting. Superb visibility, a bright sun, and best of all, he was free from the adversary of long-range riflemen, wind. For varmint hunting, Tom preferred the Remington Model 700 varmint special in .308 caliber. He determined the .308 round the best choice for extreme distance shooting, his passion. The Remington features a heavy barrel that, while more rigid than a lighter or sportier barrel, provides exceptional accuracy. He replaced the stock trigger for an adjustable Timney and lightened the trigger pull from 4 pounds to 1. He now exerted a 1 pound trigger force for his shot. The lighter and smoother the trigger pull, the more accurate the shot. It's often called a hair trigger. Tom focused his sights on a small brown rodent weighing between 5 and 10 pounds. Woodchucks create burrows in the middle of expansive pastures and fields where they can spot danger from a considerable distance. This gives the chuck ample time to descend safely into its burrow. These creatures spend the day eating clover and grass, sunning themselves on the mound of earth surrounding a dug burrow. Chucks have remarkable vision, enabling them to detect coyotes, foxes, hawks, and other predators long before they could become a tasty meal. The fertilized pastures offer an abundant food supply, and woodchucks are exceptionally prolific. Their population growth never appears to be checked. Dairy farmers despise woodchucks because their valuable cows sometimes step into the chuck holes, resulting in broken legs and dislocated shoulders. Farmers eagerly grant chuck hunters permission to shoot as many as possible. Tom enjoyed a productive morning. From his excellent vantage point behind the steep crags overlooking a chain of hayfields, he targeted 5 chucks and killed 3. He killed the last one at an impressive 450-yard shot. His marksmanship, which markedly improved in recent years, pleased Tom. His first of 2 misses was a 550-yard shot that appeared to strike the ground 6 inches behind the target. Considering his rifle could shoot a 1-inch group at 100 yards, which means the rifle could shoot a bullet within a 1-inch circle at 100 yards, and a 5-inch circle, which under perfect conditions at 500 yards. To maximize the probability of consistently hitting a woodchuck-sized critter, 6 to 8 inches wide standing, at 500-plus yards, he would need a far more expensive military-grade rifle. Tom sighted another chuck through the scope. As he pulled the trigger, the second critter dove into his hole. The bullet whizzed above the woodchuck's head as it ducked. Tom smiled to himself. Lucky guy. Suddenly, a police siren shattered the valley's silence. Tom swung his rifle, equipped with a 16-power Bushnell spotting scope, towards the blare and focused on where the highway curved around the edge of the distant field. He spotted a state police cruiser, red lights flashing, behind a pickup truck. Jim Hutton emerged from the vehicle. A second trooper remained in the car. Tom assumed the trooper was checked the pickup's registration. Sam Lattimore, the pickup's driver, was on probation. He and his brothers bought 3 kilos of cocaine in Lawrence, Massachusetts that morning, and Sam faced a long stretch in prison if the troopers searched his truck and discovered the drugs. We are fucked if those cops find the 3 keys behind this seat. I'm not going back to the can. Larry Lattimore opened the glove compartment, revealing 3 revolvers. Sam Lattimore shouted the order to his brothers as he passed around the guns. Let's get these guys. 2 doors swung open as the officer approached the truck. The 3 armed brothers bounded out. Sam Lattimore pointed his ancient Colt .45 at the trooper and fired. The trooper dropped from the center chest, hit. Seconds later, Tom heard the faint echo of the shot. Sam moved toward the fallen officer. He kicked the cop, convinced he was dead. He then approached the patrol car to shoot the downed trooper's partner. Astounded by the scene, Tom realized, "My God, I've just witnessed a trooper murdered in cold blood." Sam Lattimore, joined by his two brothers, turned their attention to the second trooper, who sought safety behind his patrol car. The trooper drew his pistol from its holster, poised for the shooters. Tom felt a bitter chill coursing through his body as the brothers advanced to the patrol car. At that moment, an unfamiliar rage surged through him. Everything sharpened into focus. A protective instinct awakened. Tom realized his obligation to protect the troopers who were under attack. He aimed his rifle at the distant target, estimating the distance to be around 600 yards. He adjusted his Unertl Ultravarmint 16-power telescopic sight, referencing the bullet drop table taped to the rifle stock. Although these adjustments seemed to take an eternity, it took only seconds. Another gunshot rang out. Through the scope, he saw the second officer slumped against his car, clutching his leg. His vehicle offered scant protection. The Lattimore brothers cautiously approached him from two sides of the squad car, their handguns extended toward Bill Layton, the remaining trooper. Tom aligned the crosshairs high on the first man, the brother who had shot the officer. He exhaled slowly and squeezed the trigger. The rifle kicked, but the gun's mass minimized the recoil. The 168-grain Sierra Match King bullet traveled 600 yards in a second. The bullet emerged from the rifle's muzzle at 2,600 feet per second and found its mark. It struck the right side of Sam Lattimore's back at 1,400 feet per second. Blood, flesh, and bone splattered across the patrol car. Sam Lattimore experienced incredible pain as he crashed to the ground. Moments from death, darkness enveloped him. When the muzzle smoke cleared, Tom realized that his shot had hit true. He worked the bolt, ejecting the spent cartridge and chambering a fresh round. He centered the crosshairs on the second brother. In an instant, the bullet pierced Larry Lattimore's lower chest, breaking into three fragments, any of which could have been fatal. Larry gave a shuddering low moan and died. Earl, the third brother, terrified by the fate of his brothers, sprinted toward the pickup truck. He leaped into the driver's seat, simultaneously starting the engine and slamming the door shut. Tom Ford had one chance before the man drove beyond range. He aimed his rifle at the pickup, targeting the driver's side window, and pulled the trigger. Sheltered behind the patrol car, Bill Layton heard the glass shatter, followed by a gruesome thud as Earl's head exploded like a ripe melon. A thick scarlet film coated the windshield. A soft rumble echoed in the distance. The pickup's idle, disrupting the valley's eerie silence. Layton slid into his cruiser, his fingers firmly gripping his injured leg. Tom assumed the trooper was requesting assistance. Aware that he needed to evacuate the area, he scrambled down the knoll with his sandbag, ammo, three empty shell casings, and rifle. Tom had parked his vintage World War II Willys Jeep in a deep hollow behind the hill, out of sight from the road. He jumped into the vehicle and navigated the rutted dirt road to the paved town road bearing west. Finally, Route 10 led him home. His adrenaline ebbed during his drive and the euphoria of the shooting abated. Initially, the experience unsettled him, but a sense of gratification soon lifted his spirits. He realized he had fired three shots within 15 seconds at 600 yards and hit three killers. When he considered the three, he regarded them not as human, but as varmints. Tom never considered reporting to the authorities. Although he was a young man, inexperienced in many aspects, he was, as the cliche goes, wise beyond his years. He recognized that the judicial and law enforcement systems are politicized and corrupt. An ambitious and aggressive prosecutor would salivate at the prospect of working this case. The publicity would provide any young lawyer an excellent start for a successful political career. Tom asked himself, can anything be gained by surrendering? At the very least, he would be subjected to lengthy interrogations, a grand jury inquiry, and undoubtedly numerous additional aggravating legal procedures he hadn't yet envisioned. Nobody would question the three perps' guilt or whether justice was served. Moreover, he knew he had saved taxpayers substantial costs. The state would have given the killers an expensive trial. The Lattimores would have lived their remaining lives at government expense in a comfortable prison. His shooting saved a state trooper's life and also rid society of true vermin, much as he helped the dairy farmers by hunting woodchucks. After a brief analysis, he realized it would be difficult to connect him to the shooting. Tom never met the brothers. They did not know Tom. A motive would be nearly impossible to establish. That he was no closer than a third of a mile from the scene of the shooting made implicating him even more difficult. Tom reasoned that if someone had witnessed the shooting and he was subsequently arrested, no grand jury would indict him after he had saved a police officer's life. Nevertheless, Tom became increasingly concerned about the implications of his shooting. Looking through a telescopic sight at men 600 yards away, they resembled the tiny targets seen at a shooting range. Shooting them felt somewhat similar. It didn't seem real. Although he was aware of the damage a bullet from a high-powered rifle inflicts on living creatures, he preferred to overlook the issue at this time. Nonetheless, another trooper would have died if he hadn't acted. He relaxed as he drove home and turned on the AM radio. An old disco song slowly emerged from the speakers as the radio's tubes warmed, "Hot Shot" by Karen Young. Tom smiled to himself and continued his drive home. All would be well.